Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Transatlanticist at the Amerikazentrum in Hamburg. I am your host, Andrew Sola. This podcast is called The Transatlanticist because we feature very special guests, people whom we call transatlanticists. These are people who represent the diversity of the transatlantic relationship in a number of different ways at a variety of different levels. The transatlantic relationship is unique because of its diversity, and this podcast highlights its many different faces. Today, I'm very happy to welcome Torsten Janke from the American Poster Institute. Welcome, Torsten.
Hello, Andy. Thanks for having me.
The American Poster Institute is a nonprofit corporation dedicated to furthering public awareness and appreciation of the poster as an art form. Torsten has curated a gig poster exhibition called Poster Double Happiness, which opens here at the Amerikazentrum on Friday, the 2nd of March, at 6 p.m. The exhibition will run through the 2nd of April. Our opening hours are 10 to 3, but please contact us in advance at info@amerikazentrum.de or visit our website, amerikazentrum.de, for more information. Entrance is free. Torsten, as a child of the 70s and 80s, I am very happy with this exhibit because it takes me back to my childhood in Chicago, seeing bands like the Jesus Lizard and the Descendants and Dinosaur Jr. and Trans Am, and also seeing the posters advertising these gigs. The bands were, of course, cool, but one reason they were cool was because they had great posters. So before we discuss the exhibition, why don't you tell us a little more about yourself, where you grew up, how you became interested in the music scene that supports these posters?
Yes, definitely. Well, thanks. Myself, I'm also a child of the 70s, which means basically my pop cultural socialization started in the 80s. And I was born and live in Hamburg. I'm a professional graphic designer. I'm a poster maker on the side, I would say. So it's still kind of hobby, but it refinances here and there more and more, and it leads to gigs like being a board member of the American Poster Institute, being responsible for the Flatstock in Hamburg, which is the Flatstock itself is the biggest gig poster show in the world. I would say that sounds really bombastic, but basically that's what it is. We have two of them in Europe and four of them now in the U.S., and basically, I would say one of the reasons I'm sitting here today is due to Flatstock. I maybe have a classic background playing in bands, doing posters for your own bands. Then people see these posters, say, hey, that's looking good. Can you do a poster for us? And so on and so on. And maybe that's a classic background of many of the poster artists who are working today.
Thank you. But do you remember, for example, when you were young, one of the first posters you saw for one of the first gigs you were at that really you thought, oh my God, this is really neat?
Yes, I'll do so. I would like to differ the one from the other, though, because the gig posters certainly started as a means of promotion shows. But by now, and I would say now also means like maybe 10 years ago, it started to develop in a different direction. By now, the gig poster is more a means of merchandise, maybe somewhere on the fine line between merchandise and fine arts you find the gig posters these days. But in the early years, it really was a means of promoting a show. Nowadays, you have the strange phenomenon that bands are promoting the posters online and not vice versa. But for me, growing up in a household, my father was a concert promoter, so I had posters around me all the time. And it started with the early stuff. I mean, I've seen shows like in an early age, maybe no child should see these kinds of shows. I went to Cliff Richards, I went to John Denver, I saw ZZ Top countless times, I saw the Dubliners and stuff like that. So, and we had all these posters back at home because my father always brought them back. So it's hard for me to really put my finger on what the first poster was, but there were a lot of good articulate German poster makers who worked for my father. So I always had this idea around me that you don't have to make a poster that looks like the album cover. You can do something completely different as long as it's working on the Litfaßsäule. So, and maybe, it's, as I said, it's really hard to say. Maybe one of the early Dubliners poster, which were an Irish folk band from Ireland. My father promoted them for, I guess, 35 years or so. And it was a whiskey glass with the heads of the five members put in this glass, which was like so spot on for the Dubliners, who were a band who were always asking, where are my drinks, when they came out of the airport, instead of like, where are my instruments?
Very funny. So you've organized this special exhibition, which you've called Poster Double Happiness. Why don't you tell me a little bit about the concept of the exhibition, please?
Yes. The idea is, and I have to say, a little bit as opposite to the Flatstocks, the idea was to show how the American scene and the German scene, or you could also say the European scene, of poster makers influenced each other's, grew commonly, who were standing on the shoulders of each other's, and reached the status of gig posters we have today. Which I would describe as a point where a relatively obscure art form came a long way to the point where now every big band that's coming through town has maybe one or two gig posters. I mean, bands like Pearl Jam, even Metallica these days have gig posters, which they sell out in minutes. And it has become a kind of business, but it's a sidearm of business. And as much as I would encourage people to come into these setting, I would still say as a business opportunity, there are maybe 10 gazillion things I could think as a better way to make some money.
You mentioned the gig poster itself, and I've been thinking about that relationship or the lack of relationship between the cover art on the album and the gig poster. How did that come about, and why do you think that's an important part of this entire culture?
I would say, I mean, I could speak for the German situation or for the European situation, which was always different to the US American situation, because over here we always had like this big Litfaßsäule or this big walls who were exclusively just to put posters on it. As in the US, you had the telephone poles, or you don't have posters at all. So the whole thing, or maybe I put it this way, the renaissance of the gig poster, which started somewhere in the 80s, due to punk rock, I would say, started with these telephone pole things, like cheaply Xeroxed posters who were put on telephone poles and were collected as fast as they
I might have made some of those when I was 17.
All right, there you go.
Embarrassing to say.
I'd like to see them. whereas over here, you always had to have a big poster to promote a band that was coming into town. So, but this culture, on the one hand, was the classic. The album cover is also a stretched poster. And on the other hand, you had poster artists who were really going for a complete different angle who had their own creative workaround with the image of a band or with an own in-joke or with song lyrics or song titles. And so you could say that even in the mainstream poster making, there was already a kind of gig poster edge existing already. On the other hand, you had the classic, this is the album cover, now it's a poster, which is, I guess, okay when you have a well-established mainstream act and you basically just want to say, hey, so-and-so is in town next month and that'll be it. I mean, just today I came across a poster which was as basic as you can think of for the German Schlager artist Roland Kaiser. It simply said Roland Kaiser, pink typeface on a yellow background. As an artistic art form, it completely sucks. But as a means of promotion, that's probably the most effective thing you can do. And there was always always the balance between these two things. Maybe the one was reacting against the other. Maybe they were inspiring each other. That's always hard to say, I would say. But the artist who gets a carte blanche by the band to just do what he thinks is good, this normally will lead to the best gig posters at all. If you have a tight art direction by the band, it can happen that it looks like, oh, this is more or less like the album artwork, so why did they bother to make a gig poster out of it? If you let the artist run loose, you will get an excellent poster 99 out of 100 times.
You mentioned you let the artist do what he wants, which immediately made me think, because we're shortly getting into Women's History Month.
Yeah.
Was this always or is it predominantly a men's movement, or have women been involved doing these designs as well?
Well, I'm afraid it's mostly a sausage party, so to say, which is not a good thing. We have a lot of very good European female poster artists. There are a lot of good female US American artists who were always part of the scene. But I would say in terms of percentage, it was mostly like maybe 70 male, 30 female, or maybe even less. And the reasons behind that are maybe the same reasons why you have not so much female bands around, or have so much female promoters around, or so on. So basically it's, I don't know, it seems to be a male thing to collect records, anal tentative collecting records, playing in bands and doing all that kind of stuff. I find it hard to really put my finger on it and say this is the reason why, but at least in the gig poster movement, we have great female artists. It's just like, as I said, like in the general music business, not so much, which is not a good thing, that's for sure.
Are you noticing a change? Are more in the current scene, are there more female designers coming up?
I would say so, yes. It's especially in the European context, I can see a lot of young female artists coming up out of places you wouldn't expect them. We had at the last Flatstock in Hamburg, we had a couple from Istanbul, Turkey, doing really good stuff. I get more and more requests to be part of the Flatstock from the local scene in Hamburg, which is always a good thing to have new blood around. And I have the feeling in countries who are already more into an equal standing between male and female, like the Netherlands, you have more, in the percentage, you have more female artists coming out of than in other countries. Like Holland or the Netherlands is an especially good example. You have a couple of really good female artists coming from there.
Good. Well, now that we've discussed a little bit about the history, you have brought in a couple of posters that we can talk about. And I must say the first one here And I'll just describe it and what I see, and then Torsten might say something else about it. Speaking of the potentially over testosterone type of designs that we have, this is for a Pearl Jam concert in Poland in 2007. And what we have is a stylized tree, and the acorns are not indeed acorns, they are hand grenades. And there's a cute little squirrel on the bottom right who is trying to catch one of the grenades that appears to be falling. So it's a mixture of cute and violent military imagery, which I think I've noticed before in some of these posters. What would you like to say about this Pearl Jam poster?
Yeah, I chose that poster to highlight the fact that many of the bigger bands, and Pearl Jam is a really good example because they started the whole gig poster thing really early. They by now have the world's best poster makers doing stuff for them. I've heard things from the US where people are lining the day before the show at the venue to get a poster right in time. And so they always were very supportive to the gig poster scene. The one of the guys from the Amos Brothers who did this poster is the brother of Jeff Amen, one of the guitar players of Pearl Jam. So that always brought good posters. And I guess they have something like maybe 300-500 posters under their belt now. So variety of styles the Amos Brothers came across with is simply breathtaking. And most of them was for Pearl Jam. I have to say, I'm not really particularly keen on that band, but that aspect of their career, I always love that they have posters and posters and posters.
Let's move on to the second one, which is from a Sonic Youth gig. This looks like it was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin in 2009. It's difficult for me to describe. The background is yellow, and it looks like an enormous skull, maybe in a I don't even know how to describe this. One reason you have to come to this show is because it's very difficult to describe the artistic and design bizarreness, I guess I would say, these posters, which are just stunning and very difficult to describe. Anyway, all I can say is that it has a yellow background with a designed skull on it with Sonic Youth in one of the eye sockets.
Yes, I don't know who said that. It's like writing about music. It's like dancing about architecture. It's a bit like what we're doing here now, talking on the air about posters, which you might be able to see on the website or not. I try to say a little bit about these. This is made by little friends of printmaking, a couple. Well, there's a female artist, a couple from, I guess they are from Milwaukee, actually. I can't really tell. And I think they managed to have a really great balance between the cute and the bizarre. And it's a multi-layered image where this skull is made up from a lot of different scenes, I would say. And the great stuff about it is that these folks started to do their first posters, and this might be a little bit of nerd tech talk now, in a software called Flash. Flash, which you use to do vector animations for websites, which is ubiquitous by now. But that's how they did their first posters. And it's their mixture of cuteness and edginess, which they have in all their processes, was always extremely fascinating to me. And the Sonic Youth is no difference. I'm as stunned as any to describe what you really see, but it's a very fine example of what gig posters can be.
So here's another example. It's very difficult for me to describe. It's extremely abstract, maybe even a little bit post-industrial or something, and it took me quite a bit to realize it was a gig poster for a band called The Liars.
Yes, which tells a lot about how much the gig poster emancipated from being a means of promotion. that when you have to really look for the band name, you know you're talking more about something more in the art direction than in the promotion direction. This the poster in question is made by a French artist who's living in Berlin now for a couple of years, which I'm a big fan of, called Damien Tran. And he's part of the collective Palais Froid, and he is it's a complete different style from most of the other stuff I brought today. It's a very loose abstract collage stuff, but he has a way with colors and forms that everything falls in its place. That's the only way I can describe it, and it's beautiful pieces of art, which and this is one of the more legible of his posters where you can easier make out the band name. Whenever I can, I include one of his posters or two in poster shows I curate, because this is, I would say, the as close to art as it gets.
And I want to stick with this point about being beyond marketing or beyond sales, because when I look at some of these posters and when I think about the punk rock movement of the 80s, it seems that now with the return of vinyl, it was just at a record release party and it was only records that you could buy. And again, the return to the gig poster idea. We are trying to, the movement is trying to get something back from a hyper-digitalized and corporatized world.
Definitely, yeah.
In some of my research before the show, I noted an interesting quotation from a gentleman by the name of Mark Barksberry, who owns the Flood Gallery in London. He was interviewed by The Independent, which is a British newspaper, and he said, "Music has always been about both the eye as well as the ear. You buy into a band for more than just the music, because of some connection with your lifestyle. I couldn't have learned to love my favorite bands in the same way without seeing how they looked and how they move and their art. That iconography is visual. You could sensibly connect the poster scene and the rise of vinyl, which are both going through the roof in America. A lot of the artists have commented to us that the poster scene has been a way of bringing something beautiful back to a digital world." And I thought that was an interesting way of putting it. It's a way of bringing something beautiful back to a digital and hyper-corporatized world.
Absolutely. That's really beautiful put. And that's, I would say, one of the reasons behind the ongoing attractiveness of the gig poster movement, because yes, of course, you can have a gazillion MP3s back at home, but you can put them on the wall. We have this one slogan for our own posters, which says you can't put your arms around an MP3. And this basically says it all, I would say. That's right. And in the moment of or in the age of digitalization, where when you're lucky, you have a little image the size of a postage stamp that comes with your download. People really longing for something to connect, to something, put their hands on, something to hold in their arms, to put on their walls. And I would say the renaissance of the vinyl record with the big covers, with the liner notes and so on, and the gig poster. These are the same parts of the metal, I would say. It really says, like, even if you have a hard disk with a complete recorded music of mankind at home, it still is not enough. There is something else you need. There is, as the fine gentleman from the Flood Gallery said, the visual part is completely missing to the whole thing. And I would say, maybe the fact that you had in the on your Apple Mac, you had this possibility within iTunes to have this cover view. It's the same thing. It's a digital simulation of a once analog culture, which still doesn't really feel right.
Indeed. And just to go back now to the Liars gig poster from Damien Tran, The other important thing I think we should all recognize about the genius of the kick poster is that it's advertising just a single gig. So it's a single poster for a single event, and that's that. And so there's something extra special about a single piece of art that is only for a single live event, and you can't access it any other way.
Absolutely. It's non-downloadable. That's the one thing, definitely. You can like make a digital copy of it. You have it or you don't have it. And because most of the print runs are very limited, once it's gone, it's gone.
Let's move on to another example that you would like to talk about. This is, I believe the band is called Tame Impala.
That's right.
From a gig in 2013. Okay, so again, it's a very difficult poster to describe. It looks like some sort of weird sculpture in the middle of a room with stars in the background and some very interesting colors now in this one, I might note. It's some fluorescent pinks as well as some dark greens, potentially, and blacks. Why did you choose this one to talk about?
It's a poster I've been coming across online for years now. And when the possibility arose to curate this poster show here, I just simply wrote in a mail and say, Paloma, would you like to send your poster over? And fortunately, she said yes, because she went out of doing gig posters a couple of years ago. She moved out of Chicago and... she might get back into it. She said, once she get a hang on that parenting thing, she might get back into a gig process. Oh, I know a thing or two about that parenting thing too. And I always love this poster because it's again, tells a lot about what gig process can be. It's just create an image that maybe only loosely resembles this band, but somehow creates a kind of magic image that people who are deeply into this band can relate to. And basically from what I've learned about this poster, it's an island in the South China Sea, and they call it the James Bond Island because it's one of these islands that the man with the golden gun played around there. And she took that one and has this kind of strange star grit glitter thing behind it. I can't really put my finger on it. It's resonating somewhere in me. Maybe that's where the unicorns are stored somewhere in, deep inside me. This is where this poster has always a place.
And this is one of the female artists.
That's one of the female artists, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, coming back to your question about the female artist, there were like two difficulties I had with these with the concept of the exhibition. First, I had to have the time frame in mind, because I know with my fellow poster friends and cohorts, it's always like, think in terms of month so that you get the posters you're asking for. So that was the one thing I had to keep in mind. The other thing was like, as the concept was to have one poster from a US American artist and one from a German artist or German speaking artist for one and the same band, I really had to see which bands I had posters for already in my collection or my friends had them, and for what posters I had to call American friends and who were able to send them over right in time. So a lot of posters I really would have loved in the collections, they were just out of the ballgame, just because I knew if I asked this artist, it will take half a year until they deliver the poster. So, and Paloma, that was the good exception from it, because I simply wrote her and she sent it out right away. So that poster was on my desk like 4 days after we mailed. So. Hooray to UPS mm-hmm. Express.
So how many total posters do you think we'll be showing here?
It depends on how much we can manage to put on the wall, but something between 60 and 80, I guess.
Okay. So yes, as I can say once again, this is a very great show. Just looking at the 4 or 5 gig posters that Torsten has brought in today has blown my mind and brought back so many wonderful memories from my chaotic youth. It is a great show. It draws together a variety of different artistic disciplines and cultural movements, and we see some really great art, some great design that is quite simply impossible to describe on the radio. So we hope you do come. Thank you, Torsten Janka from the American Poster Institute.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
The exhibition, once again, will run through the 2nd of April at the American Centrum. Our opening hours are 10 to 3, Monday through Friday, but please contact us in advance at info@americacentrum.de, America with a K, Centrum with a Z, or visit our website, americacentrum.de, for more information. And don't forget, entrance is free for this wonderful exhibit. We hope you can come.